we're turning our attention to the issue of gambling, which, as we know, is a big problem in Ireland. And a new gambling regulatory authority is on the way. Cabinet is expected to approve a plan to establish this agency today. And the Minister of State at the Department of Justice, David Staunton, he's going to bring to Cabinet proposals contained in a report from an interdepartmental working group on all of the issues around gambling. So to discuss this and how something like this might actually improve Ireland's gambling problems, I'm joined on the line now by Addiction Councillor Oisin McConville. Oisin, thanks for talking to us on Lunchtime Live.
Susan, how's things?
Good, thanks. Oisin, we might start. What would you like to see this gambling regulatory authority tackle, say in particular or as a major priority? What does it need to get to first?
Well, I suppose the first thing is that anything that is proactive has to be welcomed. Okay, so I think that's the first thing to note. So we start off on a positive, but I think the big thing for me is that there's lots of things within the gambling industry which needs to be tackled. I suppose there's two major points, maybe three for me. The first major point is the amount of underage gambling that's going on in the country. That's the first thing we need to tackle. I think the amount of advertising is the second thing, and then some sort of legislation around the amount of money that somebody can walk into a bookmaker and place on a bet over the counter. So I think if we got, you know, the nuts and bolts of those three things, which aren't going to be easy, I think, you know, we're starting to go places. But, you know, previously when we've talked about this, it has been talk. It has been a talking shop. 2013, there's new gambling legislation there from 2013, as I'm sure you know, and it hasn't been implemented yet. I wonder why it hasn't been implemented. Believe it or not, I believe that the bookmaking industry and the gaming industry are all on board with the legislation, so I'm not quite sure as to why that in particular hasn't been implemented, and that we are going back to talking about what we're going to do again when there is a bill there that is largely acceptable to all interested parties or all concerned parties.
Oisin, would you say though that bill, it is there since 2013, you're right, and they did make a promise to try and sort out Ireland's gambling problems and address some of those issues back then, but nothing has been done since then. That bill would be out of date though now, I'd imagine, with regards to how much gambling has come on and how much technology has come on and how huge online betting is now, even compared to 2013.
Yeah, no, I agree totally, Susan, but it would be an update on, because the legislation we have at the moment is the legislation from 1956, I think it is. So if you can imagine how, you know,
2013 is better than that, yeah.
Yes, gambling has changed. So, you know, it's little incremental steps, I suppose, that I would be looking for. But, you know, at the minute, the gambling industry is regulating itself, and that is completely unacceptable. And, you know, anybody that visits this country from afar, and, you know, I've quoted Dr. Samantha Thomas a couple of times, which she calls it Ireland the Wild West. You know, she is based in Australia, and anybody who's been in Australia will realise just how big of an issue gambling is in their society. So if you can imagine her coming here and saying that, you know, we were the Wild West, it gives you an idea of, first of all, how we're viewed, and second of all, you know, the conditions in which we are gambling in this country as far as regulation and legislation. But certainly, look, you know, I understand that a lot of that stuff is out of date from 2013, but I'd be worried about the fact that there doesn't seem to be a desire to implement it. Now, this regulatory authority that has been put forward today is a step in the right direction. But again, you know, something practical needs to be implemented on the ground, because we've already let down a number of generations by the fact that we haven't enforced legislation or regulation. And, you know, my worry is that, you know, this is going to turn into a talking shop, and this is going to happen again. I hope not, and I hope that, you know, there's a lot of policies that are very, very simple to implement very, very quickly, and I hope that that is the case, that that is done, and whatever hoops need to be jumped through in order to do that is done, and is done
quickly,
really quickly. Because one of the major things out there when I talk about under 18s who are gambling, So let's say you're asked to do, let's say I'm asked to go into a school to talk to students. Well, 10 years ago when I was asked to go in, it was final year students. So it was 17, 18, 19 year olds. Now it's 13 and 14 year olds. And that gives you an idea of when people start gambling. People are no longer walking into the bookmakers. It's the hidden addiction. So there's no signs. A lot of times there's no signs or there's no obvious signs that somebody is gambling at 13 and 14 years of age. But when they get to 18, that's when the problems start to arise. And by that stage, as far as education is concerned, it's way too late.
So that is, it's the underage gambling is happening all online. These young guys or girls aren't walking into a bookies as such. They're doing it very simply with the phone in their hand.
The majority of them, I'd say 80% of the gambling that's going on now is going on. You know, as you say to a young person now, have you been in a bookies before? And the chances are they'll probably say no. But you ask them, have they had a bet before?
They'll say, yeah.
And that is how it's changed dramatically in the last 10 years.
Is that particularly hard to target, though? Because we all know there's lots of, you know, age restrictions on Facebook. There's age restrictions on a lot of the social media sites. But that doesn't stop, like, a 13, 14-year-old being able to have a page on any of those places. So how do you tackle that? If they can do it through their phone, once they have a phone, then they can do it.
Yeah, well, first thing you'd be asked when you go onto those sites, are you over 18? To which you answer, obviously, a 13 or 14-year-old is going to, if they want to have a bet, they're going to answer yes.
Mm.
So then you are supposed to provide adequate identification, and you have 3 days in which to do so. If not, your account will be cancelled. That has not been adhered to, that's not been followed through with, and I know that the gambling industry and the bookmakers are all going to come on and say we are adhering to that, but they're not, because I know, because I'm seeing people on the ground, I'm seeing 15 and 16 year olds who are crippled by compulsive gambling at 15, 16 and 17 years of age. So it's not being adhered to regardless of what anybody tells you, and the simple reason for that is that it is self-regulatory, and that is just, in this day and age, I'm sorry, but that's just not good enough. So people at that age are getting, so there is more stringent checks that can be put in place very, very simply, you know, without causing major upset. I mean, if we follow through on that one simple thing, like, you know, providing a driver's license or a passport, in order to have that bet or to keep that account open, even if we follow through on that, that's one small step that would alleviate a lot of the issues that's going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's like any of these things. It is all about enforcement. There's a tweet here, regulation
Absolutely.
Without proper, meaningful enforcement is a waste of time. I'm willing
Absolutely.
To bet it would make no difference. Lots of other texts in here. One here, gambling. My brother-in-law lost his business and his family home before my sister knew. They've been devastated. It was all done online. And another one, gambling is such a silent addiction. Unlike drugs or alcohol, it can escalate to epic levels without anyone who loves them or knows them realising it isn't taken as seriously as it should be either. I suppose, Oisin, you've had your issues with gambling and it's something that you've spoken about a number of times, but I guess for anybody who hasn't heard your story, you might just remind us of how bad this addiction was for you at a point.
Yeah, well, I started gambling at 14 years of age. I was one of those people that walked into the bookmakers and had my first bet at 14 years of age. And, you know, I suppose even from that point, you know, I was dramatically enticed into it. I loved gambling, and I continued to gamble for the next 16 years. I suppose, you know, a lot of people think about gambling as a financial problem, but I became withdrawn, I became depressed. You know, I shut myself off a lot of the time from the rest of the world, and it became a real mental health issue for me. I mean, the finances were a very real thing. The begging, the borrowing, the stealing, the hooking, the scamming, the scheming, just to feed my addiction. I mean, a lot of people find it very difficult to understand gambling as an addiction. And the best way I can describe it is we see a lot of vivid images on television of people who are strung out in drugs, in particular heroin, and to do anything to get that next hit. And the hit for me and the hit for the people like me is getting on that bet. Now, it'd be wrong for me to come on the radio and say that the reason for my gambling addiction was all down to bookmakers. It wasn't down to bookmakers. It was down to my insecurities. It was down to what gambling did for me. But the only thing I want to say about all that is that there was no protection mechanism there whatsoever. And that's fair enough. That's a long time ago since I started gambling. It's 28 or 9 years. So to be still in the same situation that we're in seems like madness. But I suppose my story gets to the point where, you know, I had a choice to make, whether to hold my hand up and ask for help, or, you know, it could have went very, very wrong for me. And I had all those suicidal thoughts. I felt very alone during that addiction. I didn't want to share it with anybody. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. And, you know, I was living the consequences of my compulsive gambling. But it's worth also noting that it wasn't just the consequences for me, but it was the consequences for the people around me and the families around me. And a lot of time, you know, as the texter said, like a lot of time it's people's family homes that are gambled from around them before they even realize that the partner or the father or whatever has a gambling issue. And I think that's where the problem is, because people with gambling problems or compulsive gamblers like me, until it's crisis point, we won't hold our hand up and ask for help.
What was your crisis point, Oisin, or when did you realize that the game was up and you were going to have to get help?
Well, no access to finances really anymore. I'd burned bridges with all of those people, I suppose, that cared for me and that I cared for. I trampled across a lot of people in order to feed my addiction. And I suppose the big thing for me was while doing that, I felt, as I said, I felt very alone. I felt there was nobody to ask for help. And as a result of that, I found myself one day after a heavy day's gambling in Dundalk, I never felt alone. I didn't know if I was going to get, when I jumped in the car that day, as if I was going to get home or not. And this all sounds very dramatic, but this is where gambling and compulsive gambling, you know, brought me at the time. And I remember flicking down through my phone to see was there somebody that I could ask for help. And I genuinely had myself built up to the situation where I thought, there is nobody on that phone that's able to help you because you've burned your bridges with them all. But the funny thing is, when I did stop and I did ask for help, a lot of my issues, a lot of the reasons why I stopped gambling in the end was just the pressure. I couldn't take the pressure of people looking for money. I couldn't take the lies, the deceit. I couldn't take what I was doing to my family anymore. And that's when, I suppose people talk about a light bulb moment. I wouldn't say the light bulb moment, but it was the moment where I said, things have to change, and from that point it changed dramatically in my life, you know.
For things to get so bad, Oisin, how does it make you feel then? You mentioned there the Wild Wild West and how really things haven't changed at all in that industry, you know, since you were betting. When you see all the advertisements, and there's a huge amount of advertisements and all the sort of online stuff, and the fact that there really seems to be no political will to try and, you know, fix this problem, does it anger you?
Yeah, no, it makes me really angry. And, you know, that's when we go back to the bill from 2013, is that there was no political will, or there wasn't enough drive to get this over the line. When in the heart of hearts, I'm pretty sure that they are aware of just the crisis and the problem that is out there with people. Families have been ripped apart by this day in, day out. When you see figures on gambling or compulsive gambling or compulsive gambling problems, I always use the figure of 2 and 3, so I either double it or I multiply it by 3, because that gives a more realistic image of what's going on out there. And the amount of people that we've enticed into it now because of its accessibility, the things we gamble on, the whole image and the whole array of things that we can gamble on has completely changed the way people gamble, what they gamble on, and how they view gambling in their life.
Couple of questions here, Oisin, just in relation to gambling and underage gambling in particular. Can you ask, Oisin, how people under 18 are getting money into their online account without going into the bookies? Do they all have bank cards to do this? And if so, what should the banks be doing? Could the banks be doing anything about that? That came in from Brian in Athlone.
Well, on that, I mean, they don't even have to have their own credit card. They can use a parent's credit card. They can use. So, I mean, that just shows you how... You know, when we're talking about legislation and regulation, that just shows you how warped the whole thing is. But Yeah, well, they can deposit money in an account. They can have their own card or credit card. And I suppose the final point is that, as I say, they don't even have to have their own credit card. They can use somebody else.
Okay, Addiction Counsellor Oisin McConville, thanks so much for joining us on Lunchtime Live this afternoon. It was a pleasure to talk to you. I have Joe on the line. Joe, you're a recovering compulsive gambler. You also would be in agreement with Oisin that a lot more needs to be done to try and sort out this problem.
Yeah, that's right, Ciara. Hi, nice to talk to you. And hi, Oisin. Thanks for highlighting this issue again. Like, we're very good in this country about bringing in regulation. What we're very poor at is enforcement.
Yeah, that point has been made a few times, all right, that really, unless we enforce it, it's a complete waste of time.
It is, yeah. You know, and Oisin highlighted there about access to debit cards and credit cards and using other people's accounts. And personally, I think there's a financial answer perhaps to this in terms of regulating the gambling companies, in that you set the penalties extremely high for any infringement, and you actually enforce them, because it's a stick or carrot, you know,
approach.
So do you know what, the carrot isn't going to work, so you got to start using the stick. And if one of the bookmaking companies thinks that any infringement is going to result in, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 penalty, they will make sure that their accounts are actually created the way they should be, you know, and that any regulation brought in is adhered to. Like, I find it bizarre in this country that, you know, we know what the tax on alcohol is, we know what the tax on petrol is, they're extremely high, but the tax levy on betting is so low in this country that the companies are prepared to absorb it, you know? And we also have to look at the fact that we as a country and the government are involved in gambling, i.e. the National Lottery. It's very heavily promoted in this country. So you're conditioning people from a very young age to find gambling acceptable.
Joe, you say you're a recovering compulsive gambler. How bad did it get for you before you got on the road to recovery?
I spent 10 years in compulsive gambling, and it took everything from me. You know, Oisin gave examples there. I lost my job. I had no relationship with my family. I lost a relationship. You know, but...
And were you in and out of a bookies, or was this all online? Like, what was your...
Predominantly, my gambling was in bookmakers. I did have a phone account, but it would have predominantly been in bookmakers. But, you know... if I had started gambling online, if I had access to money, it would never have stopped. It only stopped when other people found out about my gambling.
And Joe, nobody can I ask knew, you, it's you often know. Said, I think Gamble Aware have spoken about this before, about how staff and bookies should be helped to identify, you know, when somebody is really struggling with gambling, and, yes. You know, intervene if somebody is there handing money over hand and fist, you know. What would you say about that? Would you think that there's a responsibility there of the people, the staff who work in bookies, to be maybe trained to deal with people that quite obviously have a problem?
Yeah, firstly, I was never approached by a member of staff in a bookie shop to say, do you think you're gambling too much? And it was quite obvious in retrospect to me that I was, you know, it would have been apparent that I was gambling large sums of money over a period of a day. As Oisin pointed out, the majority of gambling is happening online now. So, you know, if somebody is approached about their gambling, a compulsive gambler or somebody with an issue is approached in a bookie shop, they're just going to go to another bookie shop. No, I'm not saying they shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a approach.
But it's not the answer.
It's not the answer. And the majority of gambling now is happening online. You know, shops are only really a marketing tool, I think, you know, to keep the name on the high street. I would, you know, the figures are there. If you look at the financial reports of many of the major bookmakers, the majority of their gambling is happening online.
And Joe, are you doing better now? Are you doing well at the minute?
Oh, I'm fantastic. Thank you. I've a fantastic life, you know. Got into recovery, and I go to a recovery group, and, you know, literally absolutely saved my life, you know. Oisin spoke about suicide there, you know. I've known people who've died from gambling, you know.
And does it make you angry, Joe, then, when you see, you know, what seems to be quite a lack of political will to sort out this issue, or the fact that there's still a huge amount of advertisements around sporting, you know, different events, and the fact that the online stuff hasn't been targeted? Does it make you angry that, you know, not more is being done to try and sort it out?
It doesn't really make me angry. It makes me despair for people, you know, in their teens and early age, because I wasn't exposed to it. I started gambling a little bit later in life. But, you know, with the amount of online, everything we do now is online. Mm. All our communication is online. I get all my news online. You know, if I was gambling compulsively, it's in my pocket the whole time. You know, I don't need a bookie shop. Yeah. I don't need to leave my bed. You know,
it's very hard to escape it. Well, Joe, thanks for talking to us on Lunchtime Live this afternoon. I do appreciate it. Paul is on the line. Paul, what's your thoughts on all of this?
Hello, Susan. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm just concerned about the proliferation of all the machines that have materialised in the betting shops, because you very seldom now, if you are underage, have to go to a cashier.
Oh, so you can just go in. I don't think I've ever been in a bookies, actually. But so you don't have to go up to a counter and actually meet a physical person. You can do it through a machine.
You can go up with a machine with your €20 or your €50 note and put your bet on. And most of these machines actually give you a bonus to use them. So they actually tempt you to avoid going. They don't want you to go to the cashier. They want you to go and use the machine. If there's no way of policing anybody's age once they go in to use the machine. And I've seen over the years the proliferation of these machines is extraordinary. And I don't know whether it's to cut down on the members of staff, or it's to entice people just into their shops, no matter really what age they are, to be honest with you. Because there's nobody there to police it.
And Paul, what do you think? Do you think this is a massive problem? We're talking a lot about underage gambling and the fact that once somebody has a phone in their pocket or their hand, that, you know, it's very, very quick to place a bet. You don't even really have to think about it. What would be your view on a way that we could tackle that?
It's very, very difficult if you have an iPhone to police it. I don't know the answer. That's the complete truth. But I'm actually talking about the main street shops.
Betting shops, yeah.
Because I don't know how you stop. I mean, you know, I'm oldish, and I'm probably from, I normally get me 7-year-old YouTube for me, and he's a genius. And, you know, these people are so far ahead of us. It's incredible. So I don't know how you please it. I really don't know. But what I do know is that the betting cameras are being avoided, and not necessarily on purpose by the cashiers, because they're busy taking bets off people who are up at the counter, but they're not looking at the machines. Nobody knows who's coming in the door.
Okay, Paul, thanks for giving us a call on Lunchtime Live. Your line is a little bit bad there at the end, but we got the gist of your point. Still to come, we're going to be asking what you'd like the Phoenix Park to look like in the future. But up next, why are so many Irish children being taught in prefabs?